Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
And it opens up on a page with Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 8, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home, text 54, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mantre nanena devasya karyadravya mayim buddha suparyam divide dravyer. Translation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the 12-syllable mantra for worshipping Lord Krishna. One should install the physical form of the Lord, and with the chanting of the mantra, one should offer flowers and fruits and other varieties of foodstuff exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by the authorities. But this should be done in consideration of place, time and attendance, convenience and inconveniences. We all remember how Dhruva was offended especially by his father, not by his stepmother per se, but by his father. Because his stepmother, she was not allowing him to sit on the lap of his father. Her son, yes, he was allowed to sit, but she held him back from sitting on the lap of his father. And what upset him the most was that his father did not protest. And therefore, in the end, Dhruva wanted a kingdom greater than his father. See, he's getting back at his father. He wanted a kingdom greater than his father and his grandfather. Not just his father, even grandfather, who was Lord Brahma, by the way. So that sort of Swayambhuvamanu and then Lord Brahma. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj, greatly frustrated, turned to his mother. And his mother then instructed him. And his mother told him that no one could help him. She said, I also cannot do anything because I am not the favorite wife of the king. She is the most popular and therefore there's nothing I can do. The king will not go against her. Dhruva was not satisfied, so he still demanded something must be possible to be done. Finally, she said, nobody can do anything except the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, where do I see him? Then she said, they say that he can be found in the forest. All right, that was it. Dhruva went to the forest, 5 years old or not. Off to the forest he went, and with great determination he sat down with the desire to meet the Lord, although he had material objectives. So Narada Muni, who is an amazing personality, because it is described in those purports that Narada Muni is aware of the desires within everyone's heart. You can just imagine the capacity of Narada Muni. I mean, just think about that for a moment, that he has that capacity. So Narada Muni, he knew what that Dhruva had a desire to approach the Supreme Lord. He knew there was material desire, and he saw that extraordinary determination, that kshatriya kind of determination. Therefore, Narada Muni decided to approach him. And then it was Narada Muni who instructed him. Narada Muni, he gave him the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narada Muni also instructed him to make a deity of earth. So in the forest he was making a deity. And finally instructed him in some yoga practice, which according to that that particular time was a suitable activity. So in this way, Dhruva performed all these three, which is interesting, that all three were there. The mantra chanting, the deity worship was there. And then also a process, a yoga process to control the mind and the senses. When the senses and the mind are not controlled, then one cannot properly perform devotional service. Then we will be distracted, we will fall down. Even when we start to dwell on the senses and not yet engage in illicit activities, still the quality of our spiritual life becomes drained and hollowed out. And suddenly it all appears tasteless and bleak. So the mind and senses have to be controlled, if not by love for Krishna, then by knowledge. And Dhruva was additionally following a process of severe austerity, just as we also have these additional activities like observing Ekadasi or following the Panjika, observing certain fast days to honor the appearance of the Supreme Lord, or appearance disappearance of the Vaishnavas, or other significant days. And in that way, these days also help us to rise above the mental and sensual platform, and we can become strong. It is mentioned that Lord Chaitanya never wanted to meet a king, because a king is a man who is living in conditions that are all designed to satisfy his senses. Therefore, a king by nature is not a suitable person for a saintly person to meet. Of course, a saintly king, that is different. Many saintly kings are described in the Bhagavatam, Yudhisthira Maharaj or Parikshit Maharaj, and in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Maharaj Pratiparudha. So that is different. But anyway, it again emphasizes the same point I wanted to make, that the senses must be controlled and the mind must be controlled. Therefore, it is important that the mind and the senses are engaged in devotional service. Because the mind and senses are difficult to control. But when engaged in the service of Krishna, very easily controlled. Therefore, that is our means. So, therefore, like Dhruva, we chant a mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Like Dhruva, we are worshipping the deity, and like Dhruva, we are controlling the senses by engaging them in bhakti yoga, and Dhruva was engaging them in Ashtanga yoga because he was able to do so. Now, we cannot just hold our breath like Dhruva was for a long period of time and so on, or even before Dhruva was fasting and living on a few leaves. Right? I mean, it's like, that's not my program, nor anybody's program in this movement. It's a movement. The austerity in this movement is rather to eat. One of the big austerities. Big austerities is that there's always prasadam. It's like it never ends. I think that's more austere than anything. Anyway, Dhruva Maharaj is our example in the sense that he's chanting the mantra. So our chanting of the mantra is the principal activity. The deity worship is particularly meant to regulate our activities. Deity worship is centered around regular times. So regular times are important, again, in curbing the mind and senses, in overcoming bad habits, maybe a little rocking or something, standing up and shaking and holding by the legs. And, no, I don't know. But patting on the back is what they do in India. So Dhruva Maharaj is in a sense a model for us. The holy name is the essence, the deity worship regulates our external activity and fixes us in a regular pattern, and that controls the mind and senses, and then additionally we just engage in some practical service, so that in that practical service we can engage our conditioning, because we can deal with the material energy. So if we're used to hammer away, then we hammer. If we're used to push pens, we can push pens. If it's keyboards, it's keyboards. If it's wheels, then it's wheels. Whatever our expertise in dealing with the material energy, we can use that in the service of Krishna. So that's important, that we engage the senses in that way, because we kirtanya sadahari, to chant always, is only possible in love of God. It's not possible as an austerity for a day, for a while, but not on an ongoing basis. Therefore, currently chanting 64 rounds is good, but it's not so important, because in our current state we would chant 64 rounds as an austerity. And in chanting the rounds as an austerity, it will not necessarily control our mind, it will agitate our mind. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada sort of brought it down. Chant 16 rounds and engage the mind and senses in the service of Krishna. Then later, when we actually develop some taste for chanting, then one can increase the chanting and really chant 64 rounds, but happily and peacefully, nice, instead of in anxiety. I'm chanting 64 rounds. In this way, we are now I closed it again. That was not a good idea. I have to find it now. One sec. Hare Krishna. B-N-O 854. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is known as Dvadas Akshar Mantra, or 12-syllable mantra. This mantra is chanted by Vaishnava devotees, and it begins with prana for Omkar. There is an injunction that those who are not brahmanas cannot pronounce the pranam mantra. But Dhruva Maharaj was born a kshatriya. He at once admitted before Narada Muni that as a kshatriya he was unable to accept Narada's instructions of renunciation and mental equilibrium, which are the concerns of a brahmana. Still, though not a brahmana but a kshatriya, Dhruva was allowed on the authority of Narada to pronounce the pranav omkara. This is very significant. Especially in India, the caste Brahmins object greatly when persons from other castes who are not born in Brahmin family recite this pranav mantra. But there is tacit proof that if a person accepts the Vaishnava mantra or Vaishnava way of worshipping the deity, he is allowed to chant the pranav mantra. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord personally accepts that anyone, even one of low species, can be elevated to the highest position and go back home, back to Godhead, simply if he worships properly. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur painstakingly fought with these caste brahmanas to establish that a Vaishnava, irregardless of his position of birth, was qualified to perform Vedic sacrifices. And there are many verses. There was a debate between the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was engaged in this debate. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he first began to glorify the brahmanas, verse after verse, many verses from the Manusmriti, glorifying the brahmanas. But then he began to quote other verses. Verses like Yasya Yalaksanam Proktam Pumsa Vibhinavijan Yakam Yat Anyatrapi Dristyeta Tatte Naiva Vinir Deset. Verses that describe that one is to be judged on his qualities of activities and not on birth. So in that way, one is qualified by one's actions or by the qualities that he has acquired. So this is the... Now we see here that although the Vedic culture was... was restricting the lower castes I'm trying my level best to be tolerant, as you can see. It's not that I don't like kids, but it's not easy to be not distracted, as you can also see. So the Vedic literatures, they would not allow lower caste people to chant Vedic mantras because people would not understand properly and take a little bit from the Veda and start misconstruing it. So it was not an oppressive instruction, only brahmanas can chant and no one else. No, the idea was it should be chanted by one who can understand the mantras and one who can properly teach the mantras. But a Vaishnava is different because the Vaishnava has understood the purpose of the Vedas. The Vedas give many steps in between. Many steps of elevating oneself through the modes of nature and to come to the mode of goodness. Whereas devotional service immediately begins with transcendence. And then the mode of goodness is in many ways parallel to transcendence, because transcendence means visuddhisattva, purified goodness. So in that way, in one sense, the Vaishnava culture, the Vaishnava movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu transcends Vedic culture and is not dependent on Vedic culture. Then again, on the other hand, we see that the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is rooted in Vedic culture, because we see that they are accepting they accept ashram culture, they accept so much etiquette, like Sachimata would move in a palanquin from one house to another. As a Brahmana lady, she would not be publicly seen just by anyone and everyone, right? By lusty men. So in that way, so much social culture, so much kula dharma also, particular dharmic activities for family or according to one's position of caste and birth and all these things. In the commentary to the Vedanta Sutra, Baladeva Vijayabhusan gives a description of the Gayatri Mantra, and he says Gayatri stands on four padas, right? And or four legs. So he says the three legs of Gayatri are mind, body, and words, right? Which is, you know, not so surprising. But the fourth leg of Gayatri is the earth. So that's kind of interesting, right? Because when we get to the earth, then it means we need a practical way of life. So there comes Varnashram Dharma. There comes the Vedic culture into the picture. But the other three legs, right, mind, body, and words, are focused directly on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, on transcendence, and are rooted there, and take their root in the spiritual reality. And in the spiritual reality, yes, things can take all kinds of different levels of depth. There is, of course, Vaikuntha. It is said that in Vaikuntha there is Santaras, Dasharas, and Gauravasaka. Or Santaras means neutral relationship with Krishna. Dasharas, service relationship with Krishna. And Gauravasaka is friendship but mixed with awe and reverence. So it says in Vaikuntha there is 2.5 relationship. And that's not only in Vaikuntha, even up to Ayodhya. It says there is 2.5 relationship. It doesn't go beyond that. And then, of course, in Mathura, it changes. But then we get only Mathura Dwarka, that realm, we get only Swakiya Ras. So still, or the merit position, which is not the same as the Parakiya Ras of Vrindavan. Because in marriage, you have a ring around the finger. And once that ring is around the finger, then something has changed. That's for sure. Now you have obligations. And that's not only that the lady tells you, now you have obligations. You have obligations, actually. Shastrically, you have obligations. Once married, then so many responsibilities. Of course, these day and age, men are flakes, and they are not responsible. Right? And that's the problem. And that's why marriages are becoming really problematic, because the men don't take responsibility. They want to enjoy the women, but they don't want to look after them for life. Yeah? Which is, you know, at least for till the end of life, when, okay, maybe vanaprastha or whatever. In rare cases, even sannyas could happen. That's another story, but that's rare. And nowadays, even more rare. But leaving that aside. So, therefore, svakīya rasa is different. There's obligation. But in parakīya rasa, Krishna has to be conquered again and again. Never ever is that relationship for granted. Krishna has to be conquered again and again, each time, by the service attitude. So that is very much in the center of our sampradaya. Each time again, Krishna has to be conquered. And that's a great challenge, because, and there's always something extremely difficult to do. There's always a great test and a great challenge. Something more than we did before. So we are... The other side of the coin is that although we are not great, although we are not spiritually so strong, although we are from this age of Kali, somehow or other, this movement is quite something, because at the end of the day, even if devotees are not always nice to each other, still we are a big family. Recently there was a devotee, has told this story about a devotee who was preaching in the Middle East, and he became very active. And then someone on his job turned him into to the police, and he got deported. And the reason was so that he could get promoted and take over the job of this devotee. See? Now that's pretty low, right? I mean, I think, you know, we may blaspheme each other sometimes, but generally speaking, we don't steep that low, right, in this movement. So... It's like, if you look at it like that, the politics that exist in the world are really something else. Driven by greed. Not that there is no greed in this movement either, but maybe to a lesser extent. And some of us might even have some greed for Krishna. So my point is, I set like a high standard. On the one hand, we have to conquer Krishna, and I just want to counterbalance that with like the mercy of this movement, which gives us a lot of shelter and a lot of, you know, as long as we're with devotees, it's sort of... we may feel that it's sometimes a little tight, you know what I mean? Kind of the same old program, the same old dress, the same old culture. It sometimes gets a little narrow for the mind, but it's also very safe. Right? It's at the same time very safe. It is very protective of because this whole life around the temple is something that really protects us. You know, we may all be dressed up very nicely, everything there, you know, but what's in the mind is not always as holy as the outside, what can be done. You know, the mind is contemplating so many things, and the mind sometimes goes over the fence. I grew up in an area in the Netherlands, and somehow or other, there was a back path somewhere, and there was a Catholic monastery, and they had a wall of 7 meters high around it with glass on top. And I was always wondering who the wall was for the people on the outside or for the people on the inside. And I had the suspicion that it was really for the people on the inside. And it just couldn't get out, you know. I had a feeling like that. I was thinking, who would want to go in, you know, and climb a wall of 7 meters with glass? In Australia also, there was a... We bought this building, which was a monastery before, and all the windows were milk glass. It's just too much, you know. I mean, it was still like that. Now they're slowly changing it, but still many windows are like that, right, in one city. And it's just too much, you know. I mean, these windows, you can open them also just a little bit, you know. So I really like sort of stick my head, like get 10 centimeters of like some view, you know. So like after a while you get really like... So block out the world. The nuns and monks are blocking out the world because the mind is like that. I have these, I collect some cartoons, and I have one that I like which shows a monk who is cutting the grass with a lawnmower, and he writes on the grass in big letters, "God, I am bored." Which I think it's a great cartoon. It's a good cartoon, so my point is, we are not just only what we look like. There's another side to us. But at the end of the day, you know, that other side puts us at so much risk and gets us so entangled and somehow or other makes us go below of what we know we should be doing. And then with devotees, it's nice and simple. It's just nice and simple. It's the same old simple thing, you know what I mean? It's Mangalarti. Okay. All right. Okay. Mangalarti. Yep. Go to Mangalarti. But it is, we go every day, and it's simple and safe. It gives a good start to the day. You're there, okay. That was early. Now there's time to chant. Now there's time to worship. Now there's time for Krishna. Auspicious arati in the morning. Now there's time. So one, from time to time, one has to again submit his mind to just live with that simple culture. Because the mind, you know, after a while, wants a little more space at times. It just goes like, gosh, really, I mean... And, of course, maybe when one's very mature in spiritual life, one is able to not follow such discipline and still be deeply absorbed in Krishna. But that's for the advanced stages. For us, it's just good. The same, the simple old devotee way. Right? You know, the attire, right? The haircut, maybe, the whole thing, you know, whatever. Right? For men, shave up. For ladies, tie the hair back. Right? Instead of letting it hang loose. I was a grihastha before. I know all about the dramas that, you know, that these things could have. It used to be very strict. And my former wife, she had a haircut where, I don't know how you call that in English, but like sort of like a little...
French.
Oh, that's Dutch. That's Dutch. I know. I need English. I don't need Dutch. What?
Fringe.
Okay, she had fringe, you know. And that was not allowed. And it had to be put back with two little clips, you know. And with a thing in the middle. And that was a drama, I tell you. Gosh, that was like, that was tough. That was a big test of surrender. Two little clips. And, you know, and for us it's of course the bald head and the little pigtail on the back. You know. And all the varieties of hats that you have after. I never wore a hat in my life until I shaved my head. And then, since then, I wore unlimited varieties of hats, you know. Half of my suitcase is hats, sleeping hats, medium hats, winter hats. This is the pre-winter hat, you know, that I'm wearing today. Because I got a bit of a cold in my head now, so keep it warm. But, you know, when you have hair, you don't have these problems, actually. You know? And you got to shave it all the time. The problem is it grows back, you know. So if you could shave it only once, but again and again, it's back already. Gosh, just shave. Got to shave again. There's no end to it, no? Shaving is such a thing, you know. Hair is like, God, shave. Can we just let it grow sometimes? You can, but when you let it grow, other things may also grow. Right? Because then also a desire may grow to cut other boundaries. And how many boundaries are we going to take down? So, simple. Chant Hare Krishna, worship the deity, live near the temple. It's maybe old-fashioned, right? But it's nice. Of course, there's room. See, the tick-ticks in Mayapur, they are confirming things, right? See, the Prabhupada says, whenever you say something and the tick-ticks say tick, 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 they agree and they confirm. Prabhupada would sometimes, when the tick-ticks started, you know, would say, confirmed. Yeah. I also think that, this is my own idea, but I think that the tick-ticks get ecstatic. Right? They start ticking because they tick, tick, and get all excited. So, anyway, so and still we need also some space. In Rome, there's a devotee. He moved. He lives in a cave with his family. It's a very big cave. But a nice cave, it has a kitchen inside, and bathrooms, and like living room, and everything. A living cave, you know? But it is a cave at the same time. And it's different. Right? It's a different mood out there in the cave. It's not exactly like... And that's all right, we need that. So we need some devotees in caves, and we need some devotees in tree houses, and some devotees on boats or whatever, you know. We need some devotees in huts with, you know, we need the Vedic paradigm. We need some guys with the shoulder, you know. I always tease them, but that's just my bad character. I used to tease my little brother, you know, and then I stopped, it meant I was sick. And as soon as I started again, it meant I was getting better. Yeah. So. I used to tease Guru Kul Maharaj also when he had a straw parasol. I would call him Vamana Maharaj. We have an old relationship because when I was the manager of the restaurant in Vrindavan, Maharaj used to be the cook. So we go back a long way. So it takes all kinds in this movement. And there's room for individual freedom and need for individual freedom. Otherwise, we become like the nuns, you know. Then we need walls of 7 meters high with lots of glass. No, that's not going to work. So, and we'll find ways to get over these walls or under them or somehow. So, we need an individual solution. Today, I was talking about success to come, and one thing that came to mind is like, devotees need to be happy. Yeah? It's essential that we have some happiness in our life. Yeah? It cannot be all philosophy, it cannot be all ideals. We need some happiness now. Whatever it is, that's very important. That somewhere if you find some happiness now, if it's all austerity, then something is wrong. Of course, austerity is unavoidable. And as far as controlling the senses, that's austere, but has to be done. And taking positive inspiration, that's like Mangalarti and whatever, that's maybe sometimes austere, but has to be done. Because otherwise you slide down the slippery slide and back into the material, into the ocean of material existence very easily. That is not a good idea. But individuality is needed. So, like this, I'm here today in the house of my old friend Samba, who always has some of his own ideas. When he first joined, he had a gypsy a wagon, right? Was it horse-drawn or what was it?
He wanted to have me build one in Ireland.
Huh? And...
Horse-drawn.
Huh?
Horse-drawn.
One of these, that was... So that's different. The air must go out, not in. It's a new discovery, like, wow. When you sing, you gotta put it out. doesn't produce the best sound effects. Yeah. Well, I guess I made my point, and Prabhupada said everyone flies his own plane, you know, or everyone's on his own. So, good luck. and see you on the other side, you know what I mean? No, not. I mean, Prabhupada said, when the plane is on the ground, then there's the ground staff, and they're running around the plane, and someone's checking the tires, and someone's putting stuff in the, you know, fuel, and they do so many things, right? You know. But once you're up in the air, you're on your own. Yeah. So in spiritual lives like that, you can get all the good advice and all the good instructions, but once we're in the air, we're on our own in that sense. So we're all together, but we're also on our own. And that everyone, therefore, everyone for himself has to We have a spiritual master, we have Vaishnavas, we have Shastra, we have support, and still you have to figure it out to an extent yourself. You can't ask everything. Still you have to find something yourself, you know. You just can't all the time say, what should I do next? You know what I mean? Yeah, that's not possible. It's a sort of, yes, bigger things we can ask, but we have to also discover something ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Okay, any questions, comments, if there are?
Well,
yeah.
Sometimes we see tendency in devotees that maybe they are going a little too far on this thing of discovering on their own.
Well, then you go, you know, there's a boat called the Jnana Plavena, the boat of transcendental knowledge. It's also known as the ship ISKCON. So in the beginning, we're in the ocean of material existence, drowning, and then we get picked up by this boat, right? And then, when we're in the boat, in the beginning, because the boat is quite full, in the beginning, we're just deck passengers. We don't actually get a cabin. So in the beginning, as deck passengers, it can be tricky. There are storms, and especially the front deck gets wet because the waves, they sort of splash over the front deck sometimes when there are serious waves, right? So especially that is extremely slippery. And when there's wind, yeah, then the front deck is outright dangerous. And if you just want to venture out on the front deck, you know, then you can easily wash overboard. And you're going to need... Any experienced sailor would make sure he has a lifeline, you know, like a line that ties him to the ship, and then he goes on the front deck so that in case he gets washed overboard, that he's still hanging on a line, and they can pull him back in. So normally one doesn't go on the slippery deck. Mm. So that's something we have to consider, yeah. It's an interesting time. It's a time where we are we're looking for more authenticity and to feel that we can really, as human beings, identify more with what we're doing. And it's not a time where we just want to go the old stereotype path, right? This is how you're supposed to do it. No. We also want to do it like how I feel that I want to do it. And that's okay, but still some things are to be considered. Krishna bhaya mukahoya bhogavan shakara nikajastamaya tara japatiyahaya. That when you start flirting with maya and you start to get a little bit involved with the material energy, you will not fall down, maya will slap you down. That's Prema Vivarta. Jagadananda Pandit says, maya will slap you down. So just when you think, you know, like when we think, well, you know, I'll be careful. Maya will slap us down. So it's better. That we have to keep in mind. So a little reservation is needed. We have to be afraid of maya. Otherwise... But it is a time where we are experimenting, you know, bridge preaching, for example, you know, where we start to use other tactics to preach, right? And it attracts people. And we, you know, we do yoga, hatha yoga, although Prabhupada, you know, but for the sake of attracting people. But, you know, for the first generation, it's a strategy. For the second generation, it's normal. Who grows up with this? So that's the danger, you know. That's that. With it also, something may change in the culture. And So we need some people who just are into the simple Vaishnava culture. So you're going to play harmonium when you go up. That's a good idea. Very good. But I have no particular borderline that I'm going to draw. I'm not going to draw a line. I'm just saying it's like everyone should know for himself, and everyone's flying his own plane. So I'm putting the responsibility back with the individual. So we have to ourselves, on the basis of the knowledge and the basis of the association, keep ourselves safe on the spiritual platform. That's what it says in the 11th canto. That one has to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So that's the bottom line. You know, like we can't police people. We've tried that in the past. 7-meter walls with glass don't work. They don't work. I think you should just serve Prasad. How about that? Yeah, well, we'll talk and have Prasad at the same time, yes?
As you said, you don't want to put the wall. So where is the balance between keeping safe and taking risk?
Well, it's very safe to walk the... the path that Srila Prabhupada chalked out for us, right? Which is Mangala Arati, you know, Guru Puja, Bhagavatam, and all those things. The morning program, the evening program, certain services, you know. It's known and safe, right? But this movement... It started in with the early hippie days, with Western people who didn't know so much and gradually absorbed more. And then towards the end of Prabhupada's stay on the planet, it became like an organized mission and like driven by strong leaders who were quite forceful. And there was a strong missionary drive, and then... After Prabhupada left, that went on for a few years, and in the mid-80s we got like a phase where that dried up, and then everybody got married. First you had an ocean of saffron and a speck of white. Then you had an ocean of white with a speck of saffron. Yeah? I was the speck of white in the ocean of saffron. And so our movement has to mature, and our movement has to find new ways also of how to socially express ourselves and create like a normal, like a livable society where you can live your whole life. We're still discovering that, yeah. It's not that in 1977 ISKCON had evolved to that point. It's not that after that ISKCON also evolved. That ISKCON is still growing in that way. Even Mayapur, you know, although it's wonderful, it still hasn't evolved to what to the level of it should be on. Right? There's a lot more that should be to develop and go on. And you know. You read something like, yeah, I was mentioning that the other day in the Sikshastakam, the city of Kasi, you know, was destroyed, and there were 30,000 lecture platforms in Kasi. You know, that's mentioned in the Krishna book. 30,000. If we would have 30,000 lecture platforms in Mayapur, with little lectures, little kirtans, it could be far out. All everywhere, something going on. All the time. That's what you want. So all these things are beginning to emerge and develop in different things. In the beginning, all the devotees together, they were like a herd. They did everything in a herd, you know. They would like always do everything together. It was totally, the group was always doing one thing. Yeah? That was the early days of the movement. So it's like the whole group was in the temple chanting japa. The whole group was in the temple program. The whole group would go out together on Harinam and distributing of magazines. But it was always the group. It was always in the group together. The whole group together in the van. Just constantly, like, the whole group was just... And then gradually, we got more activity side by side. Right? And now, so many things going on side by side. So the development is going on and needs to go on. But our roots remain in what Srila Prabhupada gave us. We should keep our roots in these books, in the culture based on these books. At least a core of the movement. I don't mind if there's going to be a part of the movement that never wears dhotis and saris. I don't mind, as long as there is still a strong core that does wear dhotis and saris. Then I don't mind, you see, because it can be very broad. So you have to decide where you want to be, and that's up to you, because you're flying your own plane, as you like. Because I can tell you today what to do, but you're anyway going to do what you like. Sooner or later. Some do it sooner. Some don't know what they like. Samba, you always have to say something. But usually you say something also. At least something. Since Samba's a devotee since 1975, I think we should hear something from him.
Okay, well, it's very wonderful living here in Maipo. Such an incredible opportunity to show so many different aspects of Krishna consciousness. And in so many different ways. I mean, like Maharaj was saying about how we need to have a whole kind of all the aspects of society. And it can easily be done here in Maipo. We need to show so many different aspects of society. One of the problems, I guess, is that there's kind of not so much of a unified direction in that way. We saw when Prabhupada was with us, all the devotees, like Marge was saying, when Prabhupada was there, everyone was doing everything the same in a group. And everyone knew what to do because it was very clear Prabhupada was kind of giving instruction. It was ISKCON-wide instruction, and everyone was just following that instruction. And I guess one of the difficulties now is because Prabhupada's instructions are all kind of back in 1977, sometimes there's need for adjustment because we've got so many gurus now. And so in a sense, there's a difficulty in that everyone's going in different directions. And that's not necessarily bad, but it kind of, sometimes it seems like there's maybe a lack of direction. As if you look at Mayapur as a community, sometimes it would be good to have like one kind of clear direction which everyone should be going. But again, it's like an evolution. The movement is still evolving, and there's so many things that can still be done. And it's just a question, really, I guess, of finding that desire, finding enough people to come together to moving simultaneously in different directions. Like you've got the whole Grihastha area here. It can evolve in so many different ways. So many different kinds of Grihastha can get together and do so many different kinds of things. And you've got the whole Brahmachari. So many hundreds of Brahmacharis here. You've got this whole army of Brahmacharis going on buses. I saw them today loading up the buses with all the books. And they go to all different parts of West Bengal and different parts of India in the east. And they're bringing people to Mayapur. And then you've got all these pilgrims that come. You know, like, especially now in the wintertime, it gets more and more. You've got hundreds of thousands of pilgrims coming. Christmas time, sometimes the temple rooms are so jammed. And you're going to get these streams of people coming out from the temple room. And it's like, it's overwhelming amounts of people. And then you've got the temple of the Vedic Planetarium, that whole kind of demonstrating the Vedic cosmology of the universe. It's like a transcendental trick. Where else would you find a temple with a planetarium? It's such a unique thing, isn't it? Temples you find everywhere, but where would you find a temple with a planetarium? And it's like Prabhupada had this unique kind of trick to show how ISKCON is different. We're not just another Hindu temple. We encapsulate a whole universe of knowledge and understanding. And Prabhupada's kind of idea for the temple of the Vedic Planetarium is to show people how this whole Vedic cosmology of the universe, the British came to India and they tried to destroy Vedic culture, they tried to destroy the whole kind of superiority of India, because the Europeans and the British thought they were the superior race, and they wanted to kind of project that. And when they saw what India had, the Vedic knowledge, it was too much of a challenge, so they had to systematically put it down. And so they were very successful in putting down Indian culture. Now all the Indians are all walking around in shirt and pant, looking like Englishmen. And sometimes people say to me, you are more Indian than I am. So the Vedic culture, Prabhupada wanted to re-establish that and show the Vedic cosmology of the universe. And it's a controversial thing because, the universe is supported by four elephants, or a tortoise, or a turtle. Like, that's such a kind of crazy notion for most Western people. But Prabhupada wanted to show it. He wanted to show this whole thing of the Vedic cosmology of the universe. So, and then the whole idea of that is that you bring people here, you see the Vedic cosmology of the universe, and then you see how Vaishnavas live. Prabhupada said, to show how you can live simply but still be a gentleman. Most people think of farmers as being like, hicks with, like straw coming out of their mouth and scratching their heads. It's kind of really kind of low, negative idea of being a farmer.
Floppy head, like.
But Prabhupada said, show how to be simple, live simple, but be a gentleman. And not just a gentleman, but know Vedic culture. That sometimes people would come to the temple. I remember there was a story about one prominent politician came to visit one of our temples. And when he arrived, he met the gardener. And so he started talking to the gardener about, the gardener started preaching to him for about 2 or 3 hours, and then finally he met the temple president. He said, "My God, if the gardener knows all this stuff, what about the rest of you people?" You couldn't believe. Sometimes even our Gurukul boys, they go on Parikram every year, and they go to visit schools. And the other school kids are looking at the Gurukul and they're looking at the seekers and the doers, and they're going, even here in India, they're snickering and kind of thinking, "I love these guys." But then when they hear the Gurukul boys speaking, so I heard comments like, "How do these things come out of their mouths? Where do they get this stuff from? These are just young boys, and they're speaking that stuff that's kind of like, oh my God, that's a whole other way of looking at the world." So Krishna, we've got so much actually. It's amazing how much we've got to offer, and here in Mayapur, on so many different fronts, we're offering Krishna consciousness, so many different ways. And the potential is huge. There's so much more to be done. So many different ways. So such a wonderful place to be, and such a wonderful place to visit. And I hope many of you come back more and more, even come here and stay and help to develop all these different things that need to be developed in America. Thank you.
So I will sort of, I'm thinking about getting up because I'm trying to chin my rounds early, as you also. So I'm thinking about slipping out the door.
You want to take a shower?
Well.